While Ebola is dominating the news, rest assured that the only thing infectious here is the love of film, right?
And laughter.
Right. Yes, yes.
And laughter.
Yes. And no hazmat suits necessary. But anyway, I'm here with three of our film experts. We got Mark the Man Harrington.
Good morning.
Good morning. And Cecil B. Demosky, otherwise known as Stacy Demosky, renowned stand-up comic, self-published author, film director. What other hyphens?
That's more than enough.
And finally, we have Linda.
I was waiting to hear my intro.
We're waiting for the. We haven't found it quite. Maybe Aikido Dragonfly. Maybe that's.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
Just flew back in from a trip. So.
You're the traveling film reviewer.
Yeah, it's nice to see the that flying. Things. You know, when they release early release in cities, I can go see them.
That's
and then,
right.
Yeah. So it's good.
The flying reviewer. Yeah. Well, she doesn't have that weird hat like Sally Field. But it's our first chance to kind of look back on the summer and look forward to the fall. But the major story from the economic viewpoint looks like, you know, the industry was kind of disappointed with the summer. And just to kind of kick things off a little bit, I noticed something from the Hollywood Reporter talking about Hollywood's miserable summer. Quoting one analyst saying, many of the tent poles that underperformed were more of the same and way too long. The only bright spot was Guardians of the Galaxy, and people ate up Guardians because it was a departure from the norm. And the statistics, domestic revenue from May 2nd through Labor Day came in at an estimated $4.5 billion, an 8-year low when accounting for inflation, a 17-year low. And not one film has crossed $300 million domestically for the first time since 2001, although they expected Guardians of the Galaxy would ultimately do that. So, Mark, we're not asking you to judge the films on what drew the big audiences when you went to the theater, but just from what you've seen in the last 3 or 4 months, what feeling did you have about the future of going to the movies?
Well, I think if the box office is going to be catered to in the arena of 18-year-old Asians and our foreign market, the rest of us are in trouble. I think is a little bit of the takeaway. Clearly, the international market is where the money is, and you're seeing the studios react to that. So it was a weird summer. Those numbers represent an overall 15% decline, almost 25% decline domestically. Yet you have Transformers, Age of Extinction making, over $1 billion, largely because of 80% of that in the international market. That's troubling because the family film segment was extremely weak this summer. You had some real stellar films early in the season, but nothing that you would typically see with that continuous sort of kid appeal. For us, it was really, your successes were surprises, second installments. Captain America 2, Jump Street, of course, Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. You take those three out with Galaxy, and, the domestic box office is just really in the tank.
Yeah, and Stacy, before we came on, you were mentioning that in terms of some of these films that are designed for the YA or young adult, for those of us with an AARP card, that means young adult. But you were mentioning there was this kind of gulf, this extreme reaction to Maze Runner.
Maze Runner. My 16-year-old son went and saw it, loved it, and raved about it, and now wants to read the books. And then the very next day, I went to lunch with a friend who's in my age group, and she and her husband hated it. And so there's a discrepancy. Sometimes some of the Sundance movies can fill it, but there's only so many of those kind of movies. But there's a discrepancy in between the under 30 market and the over 40 market. And I think, I mean, the box office, the weekly box office shows that. For example, last week, the weekly box office, the number one movie only made $26 million. But, I mean, you know, remember the days when 100 million, you know, in one weekend, a movie would, like the top three movies would make well over $50 million. And I know part of that is that people stay home and do pay-per-view and view on demand. But I don't know. I just think that there is a gully. There's this gap that if somebody's smart were to pick it up, there's money on the floor to be had.
Hmm. Well, Linda, in the last two or three months, what did you see that you liked or hated, for that matter?
Uh-huh. You know, actually, I tend to avoid the YA movies.
I get roped into them.
Yeah, I know. So I've seen a lot of family comedy dramas. It seems that that's what I tend to gravitate towards. And there was plenty to pick from this summer with This Is Where I Leave You and Wish I Was Here. And so it was – that was – my summer was highlighted with a few of those. And so I think, as you said, that kind of upper end of the market I hit. But again, I – see, you know, you think with the weather around here, we'd have, you know, movie numbers would be up, box office numbers would be up just because it's such lousy weather and people are heading in. But yeah, it's interesting to see what's happening.
What have you of what you did see? What was your favorite or favorites?
You know, I really loved This Is Where I Leave You. It was the most recent one I saw. It was just, I was pleasantly surprised. The reviews were mixed on it, but I really laughed out loud. A lot of times when I'm going to a movie to review, I'm the only one there. Oh, it was interesting. But I just loved the dialogue, and I could relate to the story, and it was just, it was funny. I think it was something that touched a lot of folks that would go see that movie.
I do have a question on that. Have you ever had anybody stop you and say, hey, how come you never review movies I've ever heard of? Because I've actually uh-huh. have had that happen.
Not really. Not so much. I think, you know, it's most folk. I get great feedback in terms of the films that I've reviewed. So it hasn't. But again, it hasn't been the blockbuster mm-hmm. action movies.
And, you have a different audience.
Yeah. But I need to do that. I need to expand. Expand well, my yeah, repertoire.
Well, I don't know if any of you guys could be, you know, accused of that too often. I mean, usually you review stuff that you could see up here, you know, and
yeah, that's,
it's not one of those things you have to drive down to the Broadway Theater in Salt Lake.
Once in a while.
Yeah, once in a while. But it's not like we only go to the movies where they have herbal tea at the concession stand.
I sneak an inch. And sometimes wine.
Pizza there is awesome. Guilty as charged this week, you know.
Well, the last couple of months, you know, any favorites of yours, Mark?
Mm-hmm. Well, of course, this past week I did enjoy Shoot the Messenger.
Or Kill the Messenger.
Kill the Messenger.
Also Shoot, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, two bullets to the head, you know. Yeah. How do you, you don't, no one knows. Yeah. Suicide. Yeah. No, I think the indies and those smaller films like Kill the Messenger still, you know, are where you can find the best quality. I think the summer started strong with me. I really liked the Railway Man with Colin Firth and Nicole Kidman, early summer release. I think, you know, Kidman continues to demonstrate the broad range that she has, and the story was really compelling in terms of you think, oh, another war story, but you know, to peel back the layers of someone suffering the horrors of war late in life, I thought was really well done, and a story that's probably, you know, not told enough in these times of ongoing wars and conflict. And of course, the others, Chef and Begin Again, from the follow up of The Guy Who Did Once. You know, those were two small films that really told great stories, and chef in particular, I thought really resonated with the audience. I'm glad to see that it did fairly well.
Yeah,
John Favreau was just great.
And to add to that, I started off my summer with Chef. Loved it. It was great. And I'm a foodie, so of course I couldn't wait till it came out. But I grouped that with the 100 Foot Journey. So I think we saw a lot of food and themes, and just you can escape and. Really appealing to all senses, so to speak. So, those were some good ones.
The food movie genre had a good year.
I like to see more.
Yeah.
The Mostly Martha, and I loved that, which is not this year, previous. But you're right. There is a whole genre of that it does appeal to. I never thought of it. It does appeal to all the senses or other senses that you wouldn't normally get when you go to the movies.
And I think especially 100 Foot Journey, it was very polished and so it was it was like reading a foodie magazine.
Yes.
Just seeing everything they were making, and it was beautiful cinematography. But I think the chef story, you had that food element, but also, as Mark said, it was a great story, and Jon Favreau was fantastic in the film. So I'd love to see more of that.
Yeah. Just before we a quick question for Mark before we leave, but once that became the Begin Again, and there was some criticism that it was that it was the Sundance movie once, but it was kind of over Hollywoodized.
He had too much money to make it put another way. Yes, when you get a better cast, of that nature, you tend to think gravitate towards the screen presence. Sometimes rather than the heart of the story. And I think that film's a little guilty of that with Keira Knightley. I mean, anybody with a camera is just going to focus on her. And, and they overplayed. I think the soundtrack was so successful in the first film that they just got so enamored with the music. Mm. And the second, to the degree where you're watching people listening to music with headphones on instead of the creative process leading to the lyrics that you saw in the first film, it wasn't as engaging.
Uh-huh. We'll be back with more of the film review panel right after this.
This is Eric Lee, attorney in the Park City office of Jones Waldo. As a Park City resident for 20 years, I'm proud to support KPCW. Jones Waldo provides legal services to residents of Summit County in many areas. 435-200-0085. JonesWaldo.com.
This is Michelle from Peak Art and Frame, proud supporters of KPCW. Locally owned and operated, Peak Art and Frame features local photography and artwork, as well as digital printing, custom framing, and mirrors. Open 7 days a week, rush service available, located in the Walmart Shopping Center, 649-0801, peakartandframe.com.
We're starting. And we're back. And, Mark mentioned Begin Again. One of the stars was Mark Ruffalo, who actually danced, I think, at one point with one of the people on our panel.
That was fun, yes, at the last gala, Sundance gala, awards night party. Yep.
Yes.
Yep. That was my big highlight of that week.
We were just talking about the whole idea of if you actually met someone well known and they ask you about their new movie and it turns out to be a dog or something, so
that's happened more often than not, unfortunately.
Yeah, especially if you met anyone from a blockbuster this summer. I mean, I think that's probably the weak area in terms of, for me, I might be in the minority, but I hated Godzilla. I thought that was a huge letdown.
I didn't like it either.
I thought
you're not in the minority.
Lead cast entirely was, I think one reviewer categorized it as faceless, and I think that was fairly accurate. Great premise to do the extension, and obviously some execution done really well for the monster for the first time we haven't seen in a number of years, but I was just so disappointed with that.
Yeah. And it might have come in on a boosted a little bit because it was an improvement over the late 90s version.
The Matthew Broderick.
Broderick.
That
thing
wasn't a high bar, though, was it?
No.
Others that really just chafed me were, A Million Ways to Die in the West. I mean, talk about overhyped to start.
The follow-up to Ted, which was actually a good movie. Yeah. I was so disappointed in Seth MacFarlane. And then after that, he produced Cosmos. So what's going on? I mean, we know he has it in him.
Maybe,
so That was a disappointment.
He just goes back and forth. Maybe you have to catch him on his even efforts instead of his odd ones or something, yeah. Perhaps. Stacey, I think what were kind of your high points and low points of the last couple months?
I liked Skeleton Twins. I saw it at Sundance, and then I saw it again recently, and I thought, you know, the thing I liked about that movie is that the characters, Bill Hader and Kristen Wiig, who are you're used to seeing in goofy, laugh-out-loud modes, they were still funny, but in a more poignant, dressed-down way, but not dumbed-down. And so I just thought it was it wasn't this great, wonderful, best thing I've ever seen, but it was very authentic. And that's what I appreciated about that movie. I wasn't bored once or looking at my watch. I really enjoyed their performances, and the writing I thought was good too. So that's something that I liked so much at Sundance, I actually went and saw again when it came out.
Yeah, and I saw that, did not see it at Sundance, but I saw it recently. And, my thumbs up concurs with yours that liked it a lot, especially I think they were both excellent. Well, three of them, Wigg and Bill Hader and Luke Wilson.
Mm-hmm.
Also.
Luke Wilson, yeah, he was really good.
Who was like your ideal, kind of the dreamy boy next door husband. That, uh-huh. that I would think is kind of the guy you'd want to. That a woman would want to end up married to.
Well, but she did a good job of like, why don't I love this guy? And he's everything. What's wrong with me? I mean, we've all had that guy in our life at one point or another. So
yeah, and Hader, I think, an interesting challenge to take a character that you've often played in kind of a cartoony manner, which Hader has done, and do it on a more serious level, still with some humor, but mm-hmm. kind of the dark edge to it. So mm-hmm. really liked
it. It was a height wire walk for them, and I think they accomplished it. They did well. They pulled it off.
Yeah. And
I was a little more mixed on it. I think your comment on the end is the fact that you acknowledge the writing. I think it was a writer's type film slash New York. I mean, I think it's one of those quintessential indie films that sometimes has a smaller audience because it does require that patience and sort of that quirkiness. But the writing was really well done. And yeah, they did a good job. It'll be interesting to see if any of the cast makes our bonus question answer, or if, you know, their transition into that genre takes mm-hmm. them out of the potential for our mystery bonus question cast.
Yeah. Same. I loved it. I saw it at Sundance. So again, it's, you know, when you really can delve in and have the Q&A afterwards, I think you appreciate it that much more, but I thought it was great.
It's a slow burn movie.
It is. I mean, some great laugh out loud moments for sure. And some really sad, touching moments as well. So be prepared for both.
And that does kind of lead us into, kind of related topic of pictures maybe we remember from Sundance or saw at Sundance and are kind of coming out right now.
Oh, Whiplash.
That's the one that that's not out yet. Is it?
It's released in limited release right now.
It's not wide yet.
My understanding is it had a dual release, both
I think
e-release and came out Monday on limited release.
Yeah, something like that.
So it's
not in the neighborhood yet.
Yeah. So it's not what?
Not in our neighborhood yet.
It's quite. I think it's L.A. and New York.
Uh-huh. So, and that a lot of anticipation for that one because that was like maybe the most buzzed about movie at Sundance mm-hmm. this year.
Mm-hmm. And Rudderless. Actually, Rudderless is the one I'm thinking of that had the dual release.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
been released on video and is about to come out next week, I believe. And that's another one that did really well.
Yeah, so I did not. So who saw Whiplash at the festival?
I did.
Yeah. I gave my tickets to my young adult. She loved it.
Every
so
time.
You didn't get to see it?
I didn't. I usually give them a choice, and that was her first choice.
As a parent
loved it. She
of
loved
musicians,
it.
You will love it.
Yes.
I do have the cutest three-year-old pictures imitating the drummer in the film, because every time my boy gets close to a drum set, he goes into Whiplash mode.
Did you see the film?
Yes, I loved it.
I did too. Yeah.
and a few of the Sundance pictures that are kind of showing up at the Park City Film Series.
Boyhood's there right now.
Boyhood, mm-hmm. and which is, I mean, I don't know if it's how good it is as a film, but just that whole premise of the filming the youngster growing up and using a youngster for 12 years, mm-hmm. and growing up.
Well, that took a lot of guts as a filmmaker, because a lot of things can happen in 12 years. You know, people change, people die, people, yeah. You know, change careers, or he could have lost a lot of key elements that would have prohibited the clean completion of that movie. But it didn't. It worked. It absolutely worked.
Yeah. You know, it'll be interesting to see how the audience reacts to it long term, because it's one of those that will have a slow burn and I think will gain some momentum through word of mouth. But it may be one of those, you know, it's also kind of getting renowned for having like the highest consensus critics rating of any film ever. And that can be, you know, a bit of a as dangerous as mm-hmm. it is a potential for success, because of the sort of the gap between popularity and critical success. Because the critics, you know, will appreciate the technical components and the risk that was taken to make that film more than the audience may, or it may kind of trudge along into a, you know, an Oscar wild card. So it'll be interesting to see where that goes.
Yeah, well, every Sundance director, they dream about that picture. Like we said, the one that will appeal to both the youngsters and the old folks. The second category, the one that will get the audiences in and the critics too.
Hire Scarlett Johansson.
I mean, yeah, anything you know, she's in.
Yeah. Talk about somebody who's knocked it out of the park this summer. I mean, Lucy had no business making as much money as it did, and again, buoyed by a huge international market, did outstanding. Yet showed that gap. On the other side, you know, most critics, you know, called it kind of puffery, or, you know, and they made fun of the moniker where you use 10% of your brain. They said they used like 10% of the audience's brain watching the film. And then her indie, you know, film, again, sort of big critical success because of its uniqueness, Under the Skin, just because of the technique was so novel in terms of putting her, you know, in Europe on the street asking these guys, you know, questions on camera. But a film, you know, most audiences couldn't even sit through, never mind go, you know, pay to go watch. So really
unique. Don John's Addiction was
and she popped up in Chef too.
Yeah. Chef, she was everywhere.
And so. Captain America.
Captain America. Boy, that is a busy woman. And she had a baby. Not yet. I think Did she have it?
I think she had it.
Okay. I think she just had it.
She's just
like 10 minutes ago, Linda. Just got a text.
Just type her. And they shot a documentary, and she's in that.
Yeah, that's
about the
right.
Birth, and
yes.
She's in that. Now.
She was front-loading because she's going to be busy now with this child.
Smart. Yeah. Good strategic move.
Yeah. Linda, is there anybody that you saw a lot of on screen? Or if you any particular favorite actress or actor that you kind of follow?
It's tough to say.
Or director.
I mean, I'm always a big Tina Fey fan. So, again, just seeing This Is Where I Leave You. And she had a unique role in that. It was, like I said, comedy, drama, and a little bit of both. So I tend to really appreciate anything that she's in. But, no, I don't think there was any big, huge standouts for me. I thought it was like, just kind of a mediocre summer. Yeah. Not great.
Yeah, and Stacey, you know, if you could summarize the summer in one word, what would that word be?
That word would be snooze. You know, napping. It wasn't spectacular, and it's such a lost opportunity because summer actually generates bigger box office than the holiday season, and so that's why I think everybody, in terms of the business side of the industry, is just really anxious about and playing their cards carefully about how we're going into this season. One of which, a movie I want to talk about that just came out, called The Judge, with Robert Downey Jr. It's interesting because that's the only movie that I could see, like on the Entertainment Weekly website, that is a new movie that can be categorized as a big budget movie that's not a sequel. Because we got coming out Hunger Games, The Hobbit, Horrible Bosses 2, The Penguins of Madagascar 16 or whatever. And so this is really the only big budget movie that isn't something, a retread. And it's also, I think, from what I've seen, going to be somewhat of a smart movie. And it's the first movie that Robert Downey Jr. and his wife, Susan, have produced together. And it's actually the first time we've seen him outside of Sherlock Holmes and Iron Man since, you know.
He was in Chef 2.
Yes. Everybody was in that movie. Yes.
He was great in Chef.
But it was such a boring summer. I would have thought that they, because this movie's actually been done for a while, he could have released it in the summer, but he didn't. He's releasing it now, which is kind of the traditional snoot, the what I call the armpit season.
The armpit?
Yeah, the armpit season of the year is fall.
Well,
strategy-wise, I mean, I don't know. Your film can shine, but it's just not.
Well, it's smart,
close enough to.
He can re-release it right before time. Christmas.
Yeah.
Well, I always thought, at least from October, like maybe October 1st on, that you were going into kind of the serious season, and I don't know if that's you know, do you think that's really true or not? That when they start to unveil their kind of Oscar bait kind of movies.
No, I think that's more like right after the first of the year they re-release or release something. That's like when Crash came out. Sometime when there's just nothing else going on. Mm-hmm. I think fall is the dregs because then people are really anxious to see what comes out right before Thanksgiving.
Uh-huh.
And that's when the real Christmas and the whole holiday things. Yeah. Because
Okay.
if you release then, you can re-release right before.
I have a little different take. I'll share with you after the break. But
all right.
The British are coming.
The British are coming. Okay. Okay. Let's see.
Hi, I'm Kelly from San Francisco Design, longtime supporter of KPCW. We provide a mix of European and mountain contemporary home furnishings for a unique Park City lifestyle. Our showrooms are in Park City and Salt Lake, and both offer complete design services. We're on the web at sanfrandesign.com.
Matt Gould and Griffin Matthews, co-creators of the award-winning Broadway-bound musical Witness Uganda, opened the 2014-15 Eccles Center season with heart-thumping Afro-pop sounds and life-changing stories on November 1st. Part concert, part talk, the evening starts at 7:30. Tickets start at $20. Call 655-3114 for tickets and information. Brought to you by the not-for-profit Park City Institute, entertaining, illuminating, and educating since 1998, and a KPCW supporter.
Yes, we're trying to pick up the pace a little bit here with one of the songs from Rocky Horror, kind of a reminder that there is a kind of a goofy side to the fall season, and Halloween's coming. We're just a little under 2 weeks away from Halloween craziness, and Rocky Horror, after all, was a British film back in the 70s. So, Mark, you were saying about the British are coming.
I think just the other side to Stacy's comment is that you do get some releases that correspond with the successful releases of the fall independent film circuit. And so Toronto, Venice, whatever. And so I think you will see a bunch of Oscar frontrunners, you know, come out in the fall. And I think you're starting to see those. And she's right. Some of them play games with the release schedule in terms of right before, you know, Christmas to get that eligibility and then get re-released. But hopefully, you know, I think we are going to see the Imitation Game, I think, comes out. Mm-hmm. And the Stephen Hawking film is already, I think, slated to come out next week. That's called the
I just saw it.
Truth of
Consequences.
unbelievable truth of everything or something
yes.
like that?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
What's the imitation game?
Imitation game is you'd think this – talk about stories that have been told, but it's yet another decoding Enigma machine film. I think it also has Keira Knightley and a large
Yes, I've seen
so,
it. Yeah, I remember
and that did
now.
Really well at Toronto, and I think – but by all accounts, focusing on more of the scientific sort of background as opposed to the agent angle on it or the soldier angle. So I think by all accounts, that's really got a potential to hit the Oscar list.
Yeah, and the story of the British code breakers who were holed up in this leafy little park, on this intense mission to break the German code machines.
Yeah, it's kind of like their version of Fat Man, Little Boy in terms of where, so... I think also the small film about the English painter Mr. Turner, I think, is getting a lot of word of mouth early in terms of just a biopic of a little, again, not a lot of mainstream potential, but one that could do.
I'm hoping that'll turn out because Mike Lee, I think, also did the period piece on Gilbert and Sullivan Topsy Turvy. So sure. I'm hoping that it would be something on the level of that.
Actually, just to jump in, if anyone's wondering, the theory of everything.
The theory of everything. That's it.
It's the Hawking picture. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Are there any particular flits, just scanning our Entertainment Weekly fall preview? Anything you're looking forward to, Linda, in the next couple months?
Wild with Reese Witherspoon, I think, is going to be great. I'm looking forward to that. I'm kind of intrigued to see Annie, a remake. I've always loved that story, so it's been remade a few times.
Just a few.
So we'll see how that goes. Trying to think if there are any others. I need to get my to-do list a little bit more. So how about you?
Wild was one. As I previously mentioned, The Judge. Which is already out, but I haven't seen it yet. But it's only been out since less than a week. I'm not going to go for any of the remake or the sequels. I'm not interested in the Hunger Games Mockingjay or none of them are Horrible Bosses 2 would be the closest one.
Well, Dumb and Dumber 2.
No.
Yeah. I was going to add, who's charged up to see Dumb and Dumber 2?
No, I just love the first one so much. I just don't see how that's going to happen. Same with the we were talking before about the Ghostbusters remake with women instead of men.
Yeah, we're going to get into that toward the end of it.
So I would say Unbroken's coming up too.
Unbroken, that's true. So mine would be Wild and The Judge.
And anything on your particular list, Mark?
I did see the preview for Interstellar by Christopher Nolan. That, those big space movies seem to either go one way or the other. They're just, totally overindulgent or has the potential for really kind of breaking the mold and being something great. And Clint Eastwood's new film, American Sniper, I'm interested in. So. Looking for those two this fall.
How about St. Vincent? Have you guys seen the preview for that? Mm-hmm. That looks interesting.
It does look interesting.
Yes, Bill Murray and Melissa McCarthy.
Mm-hmm. That'll be an interesting pairing.
Mm-hmm. It kind of reminds me, it's completely different story, but like a Rushmore being that kind of quirky balance. But I like that kind of stuff.
I like quirky too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Monica just reminded us, Birdman is coming out just pretty soon now.
I think limited release right now.
Yeah, this weekend, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep, that'll be interesting.
Yeah, another film that might need to have a gut check on their marketing. I think their preview that they ran for that was, questionable. I think they could package that differently. I fear it's not going to get the audience it deserves if they don't kind of repackage that a little bit. And the name's a bit of a problem in terms of the legacy of the old Alcatraz film and whatever. So I think it, most people outside the show community may not understand what that film is really about.
Birdman, the thing Birdman is a remake of Birdman of Alcatraz?
It is not.
No, it's not.
It's about someone who's reinvents himself, as I understand it, to remake their career on a Broadway show.
And then after he was a superhero, Birdman. Right. So, just kind of dark. Michael Keaton. Mm.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Well, when Mark mentioned The Imitation Game, I thought that was maybe another young adult thing about impressionists who are sent into the woods and kill each other off, you know.
And they have a video camera and they tape most of it, and then the video camera gets lost and somebody finds it. Never heard of that before.
No, and then they've interacted with the audience to decide who wins. Yes. Yes.
Yeah, people doing that. Oh, hi, hello, I'm Kermit. Arrow through the throat. You know, that would be it. The Fury is getting some good word
some
of
good
mouth
buzz.
as a World War II flick with Brad Pitt.
Yeah, and you know what? We haven't seen a good World War II flick or war movie. You know, like there was a time. There was MASH, there was Catch-22, there was, you know, this period where the war movie, and then prior to that, from the 40s and 50s, the war movies, and there hasn't really been war movies in a long time.
I'm not sure that, I can't think of anything since perhaps Saving Private Ryan.
Yeah.
That was the last major one that got into that.
Eastwood's Letters from Iwo Jima, and that in the follow, that was the first one. The second one was a series. I forget the titles, but those are pretty good.
Yeah, and we can't count Tarantino in Inglourious Basterds, because that was a World War II fantasy.
No, that was great. I loved that movie, but no, I don't think we can count that one.
Yeah, we're just here to kill Nazis. I'm putting down on my list is a picture that has received good word of mouth going back to Cannes, and that's Foxcatcher.
And that was a Sundance film.
Did
you see it?
I didn't see it. I didn't either. A wrestler. It's about a wrestler and his coach. And
I missed that, and that was at Sundance.
Oh no, actually, I got that mixed up with another one. But I'm very familiar with that story because I actually used to work in the wrestling world, amateur wrestling.
What are you thinking?
This is about I think it's about DuPont. He murdered one of the DuPont heirs.
It's a drama with Steve Carell doing a serious role with a somewhat prosthetic nose.
As the case of the
DuPont heir who kind of fostered not the Hulk Hogan type wrestler, but the real the Olympic wrestler.
I actually was in that space around that time working with those folks, and it was it's just a hotbed of wrestling in that area, and it's frightening to hear. And I mean, he put so much into the sport to benefit, but then it was very sad.
Yeah. So the theme of comic actors going off in a serious direction. So that'll be interesting to see too.
I think Steve Carell's tried to do a bit of that, little bits and pieces here and there.
Yeah, he has.
And Channing Tatum doing a breakout role for him as one of the wrestlers involved. So. We're winding up here to our next break, and we'll get back to some of our couple of bonus questions that I wanted to throw out to the panel here. So we'll be right back.
Join University of Utah Healthcare at Redstone, a nonprofit organization, for their Five for Life Day on Saturday, October 25th. The morning includes breakfast and makes it convenient for women to get life-saving tests for heart disease, breast, cervical, and skin cancer. Health advice and a chair massage will be provided. Most insurance plans are accepted, but registration is required. 435-658-9249.
The ABC 4 Weather Report comes to you live Monday through Friday at 8 a.m. after the NPR News. Brought to you by Albion Financial Group.
All Okay, and we're back with the film review panel. And I wanted to throw out a couple of random topics here for the group to consider. And one was that a couple of weeks ago, the major movie news was that the director of Bridesmaids, I think his name is Paul Feig, and of course had a huge success with that picture, but he announced he was going to do a remake of Ghostbusters, but with women. And I guess that's sort of like a Annie with black people, or
The Wiz,
the famous story of the studio exec that said, "Let's do The Wiz, but with white people."
Well, given that it's Paul Feig, I always pronounce his name incorrectly, I'm sure we'll see Melissa McCarthy and Kristen Wiig, maybe Maya Rudolph. Mm-hmm. Might pop in there, but it'd be interesting.
Yeah. So you're basically interesting idea. You wouldn't, your vote is, you know, go for it.
I don't know. I don't know. I mean,
these days, why not? Everything else is getting remade. So yes. I don't think anything is off limits. I don't know. I think the cast is kind of, casting will be critical to it. I think you can go one of two ways. Of course, everyone has to be tall enough to wear a jetpack or the throw pack. So that eliminates some funny women that otherwise might be in play. But I kind of put my three as Emma Stone, who the director's already put on his wish list, Emily Blunt, and Elizabeth Banks. I think that's interesting. I like those three.
That would be interesting.
You need to have the ability to be a scientist, but have the slapstick fall down Chevy Chase kind of.
How about Sandra Bullock could pop in there?
I think I had her originally, and a wild card could be Rashida Jones. I think is an up and comer that could be good. But the more interesting question may be, who would be the male Dana, or the female Lewis Tully?
The male Sigourney Weaver.
Yeah, because those might be a little trickier to cast. Because I thought Melissa McCarthy would be almost better as Lewis, you know. But certainly Bill Hader or even a Bradley Cooper, I think.
Jason Sudeikis would be good.
Pull off the Dana role.
Yeah, Stacey, your dream cast, if you.
Oh gosh, my dream cast for Ghostbusters. Actually, Sandra Bullock was on my list as well, and I agree that he's probably going to go for his stable of actresses for it. I thought to go against type and have somebody like Keira Knightley, or somebody that you just, I would love to see somebody who was like a blockbuster movie person, but not in that traditional blockbuster role. But they'd have to have the chops to pull it off.
Scarlett Johansson?
Oh, she's just in everything, though. She's just in everything.
Yeah, if you're going to go there, you got to go like Jennifer Lawrence.
Yeah, that's kind of, I was thinking of that kind of stuff. But
that
they're in everything.
One of those movies that appeals to a broad audience.
I want to see somebody of that caliber bring it down to a slapstick comedy and see what they can do. I think that would be really, really interesting.
But if you go Sandra Bullock, I think you almost got to go older. And I think that could be equally or even more funny. Because if you go with her and like a Jane Lynch and even... Allison Janney.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
like,
that'd be interesting.
Some kind of combo like that would be kind of fun.
Yeah. What if you took Sigourney Weaver and put her in some sort of...
The flip.
Yeah. I thought about that.
Yeah.
Well, that would be one of my recommendations, is to get somebody from the original to maybe Sigourney or Ernie Hudson or one of the originals to be kind of the person that starts off the new Ghostbusters group, that kind of hand off the baton
in
some way.
That's been pretty common, I think, in a lot of you'll have a cameo of someone that was in the original to weave in.
Yeah. And I thought of doing an older woman cast. Cheryl Hines was going to be then Sandra Bullock, Cheryl Hines. And then I thought Sigourney Weaver even win one of the principal roles. But I thought it would be funny because it would lend itself to a lot of of aches and pain, you know, because it's a physical role. Right. And so now they're going to have to hit the gym. You know, they could have jokes about that. That could be a whole other element of the story that...
Sliding down the pole in the firehouse.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Well, you could do the really dramatic... You could go whole hog and get a quality cast and just throw, you know, Meryl Streep... Judy Dench and Glenn Close and Helen Mirren and just, you know,
they would pull it off. Just, I'm telling you.
Helen Mirren.
Masterpiece theater version of Ghostbusters.
Yeah, if we've got to do Batman versus Superman, you might as well do Red 3 versus Ghostbusters. CIA agents come out of retirement to kill ghosts.
Yeah, exactly. And then I would love to see... a part where, you know, slime actually accidentally gets on their face, and then the next scene they're using it as a mud mask. who knew?
Bottle it and stuff.
Yeah, well, that could be the other thing. Is one of the major roles is a ghost. Maybe you could, instead of just a special effect like
Slimer. That would be the Judy Dench role. She would be Madam Ghost, who really keeps the rest of the cast on their toes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay.
But I thought if they're going to remake it, and they're going 180. Well, if they're going 45, they might as well go 180. I mean, they just let's go all the way around and let's make them older women with grandkids, you know, baby boomers who are remembering songs from the 60s. I don't know, something just go out there.
Yeah.
Just go out there. Go down in flames.
Yeah. We've got to go out and bust this ghost. Okay, well, I have to find somebody to babysit, you know.
Or I need some insurance.
The grand.
Yeah. I haven't had my fiber yet today. As soon as that kicks in, I'm good to go.
Yes. Before our time runs out, wanted to try one more bonus question, which was inspired by last year's Oscar ceremonies, that the winner of Best Picture was 12 Years a Slave, and it was highly commended and everything, but said it was a very dark, difficult picture to sit through.
Right?
A lot of graphic violence, mistreatment of the slaves, and it was. Some people have come up with a whole category for this kind of picture, which is the great movie that now that I've seen it, I never want to see it again. I have no interest at all.
That's an easy one for me. Requiem for a Dream. Not even Jennifer Connelly doing bad sex things at the end of the film for a bunch of perverts would get me back in that film to watch. As good as it was, watch Jared Leto, her, Ellen Burstyn's characters denigrate. Through the entire film was devastating and emotionally draining. I never want to see that film again.
Well, if they did it with Scarlett Johansson, we'd see it.
Yeah, Scarlett Johansson and Jennifer Connelly might get me back into watching Requiem for a Dream 2, but I doubt it.
Yeah, Stacey.
Well, there are many Sundance movies that fall in that category, but then they weren't good movies. I think Requiem for a Dream was a good movie. I just wouldn't sit through it again either. And mine is My Dinner with Andre. I liked the movie. I thought what they had to say was interesting, but it basically is two guys sitting at a table and having a conversation that you're eavesdropping on. And once you've done that, there isn't really any reason to go back and revisit it. And so, again, it wasn't a bad movie. And same with 12 Years a Slave. I saw that. Wasn't a bad movie. I'm not rushing out to watch it on DVD. So that would be mine.
Did the food at least look good?
The food,
the glimpses that you had of the food.
See, we come full circle. There was not enough of the food in my dinner with Andre.
You wouldn't put it in the foodie category.
Yeah, I wouldn't put it in the foodie category. No, not at all. It's a talkie movie. And it's just a voyeuristic thing as an audience member to watch these guys have this interesting conversation, and then you're done. Then you go to the big blockbuster popcorn movie, and that's a roller coaster ride.
Yeah. And Linda?
Well, I sort of looked at some of the past Oscar winners, and big blockbusters, Chicago. Once is enough for me on that one. I really didn't love that movie. And Titanic.
I actually saw that twice.
Did you? I mean, it's long. And it was fun the first time, but yeah, I've unfortunately seen it a few times. And once is enough.
Yeah, spoiler alert, you know, the boat sinks.
Oh, shit. Sure.
Damn.
Yeah. How about you?
Well, what came to mind was maybe Passion of the Christ, which in terms of, you know, the violence, in terms of the graphic violence, it did remind me of the descriptions of 12 Years a Slave. And just,
but you said it had to be a good movie.
Oh,
a good
yeah. Or an acclaimed movie. Well, maybe certainly a lot of Sundance pictures, maybe Welcome to the Dollhouse or something.
Oh, yeah, I would agree with that.
And the only, you know, Mystic River, you know. Mark, even though it's set in Boston, that one just, you know, I wouldn't, you know, want to go through that one again.
Anything in that topic is just hard.
You know, having done the film review panel, I don't know if we ever want to revisit this, but we're done for this season. We'll get back toward Christmas time and when the Sundance film program comes out, maybe we can take a look at the films they've got lined up for Sundance 2015. Talk a little about that. So, in the meantime, Mark Harrington and Stacey Domalski and Linda Jader, thank you much for being there.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Yep.
You're listening to KPCW Park City.
Additional funding for news and information on KPCW has been provided by University of Utah Healthcare, located at Redstone, 435-658-9200, redstone.uofuhealth.org. Peak Art and Frame, custom frames, mirrors, shadow boxes, art, 435-649-0801. The Corporation for Public Broadcasting and listeners like you.
All right, it's coming up on 1 minute after 11 o'clock. We've got NPR News headlines up next, followed by a whole afternoon and evening of music.